The song is I Don't Want to Be an Asshole Anymore. But unfortunately, with how bad Survivor Series was, we're going to have to be assholes tonight, Mike. Good evening. Welcome to Brain Stew Wrestling. Pre-Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Yes.
And yours. If you're listening to us on Thursday, well, thank you, but eat some turkey.
Yeah,
stuff your faces.
Get your... Like, why are you listening to us when you should be eating turkey? Listen to some Black Friday when you shouldn't be shopping.
Yeah, go punch people at the mall instead of listening to us.
No, I said don't do that. I said listen to us instead of punching people at the
but
mall.
You know what? If you want to get as enraged as we are about Survivor Series, you might just punch someone at the mall.
Also, though, if you're in Europe, don't punch people in the mall because you're only allowed to European uppercut them in the mall.
Correct. Again, this is Brain Stew Wrestling, pro wrestling talk without the PG filter. My name is Hammy. Joining me in studio is, of course, Michael, no longer hipster punchy, Falcone. And Mike, let's just get right into it. Survivor Series, wow.
Yeah.
Wow is all I can say.
And not a good wow.
Yeah, definitely not a good wow, because after last week's show, I looked at the card. We watched every Raw and SmackDown leading up to Survivor Series. We were paying attention to the storylines. We gave our predictions, but really, when the cameras and we signed off and the cameras are all off, we said to one another, "Is this really going to be good? Do we really think and have confidence that this show is going to be good?" Because truth be told, I did not think Survivor Series was going to be as good as we wanted it to be. I expected Survivor Series to be mediocre at best. And you know what? Survivor Series exceeded my expectations in a negative way. It was so bad that it exceeded my already mediocre at best expectations. What did it do for you, Mike?
All right, so here's what it reminded me of. All right, just picture a chicken running with its head cut off. That's what I say the booking of Survivor Series reminded me of. It made no sense in so many ways. Like, the things that they did during this episode, just, like, I was at a loss. I could not, like, make any sense of what was going on. Typically, their booking has some form of semblance of possible sense being made in a weird, fucked up way.
Hashtag WWE logic ran wild this week.
I know. At this point, I think Vince took all the booking plans and hammy logic'd them.
I hate to say yes, but what other way can you say that Survivor Series was badly booked than to say if me at my most pissed off moment ever booked it?
So when were you going to tell me about your new job as the head of creative?
I didn't know I had a new job as creative, but you know what? That could have been my booking. That could have been the way I booked shows.
You know what? Fuck it. Have Goldberg beat him in 2 minutes.
Oh, my God.
No, fuck that. It's too long.
Let's talk about that for a second. I know we air live on Wednesdays. I know we do our show Wednesday after Raw and SmackDown. We do this on purpose so we can recap Raw and SmackDown and the pay-per-view together, but
we
need to talk about that awful, awful, awful booking
horrendous
decision.
Booking.
Do you get the hint that we found that awful yet?
The
booking decision to have Goldberg go over Brock Lesnar that quick and that dominantly. You might as well just say, hey, remember the 2 years we spent building this guy?
Yep.
All those plans just fucking gone. Because that's what you did.
Hey, we're going to book it the way we want it. Get over it.
I have WWE's writing plans here. Let's see. End The Undertaker's undefeated streak. Okay. No one's ever done that before in wrestling history. Brock Lesnar does it. Okay. Absolutely dominate John Cena at SummerSlam.
Check.
Absolutely dominate Dean Ambrose at next year's WrestleMania. Okay. Dominate every single person that will ever face him.
Check.
Check. Only appear in rare instances to book it as a spectacle. You're paying this guy God knows how much money, and you want him to come and be an attraction, and people who come to see him are lucky to see him live. You sold me on that. I'm not all for part-timers most of the time, but Lesnar has earned the right to be a part-timer because not only does he draw, he has great programs with everybody because he makes them look strong even when he beats them, because if you can last the longest against Lesnar, you look strong because in the end, Lesnar is the beast, the conqueror of the streak, the dominating champion he was. And you know what you do with that?
He's also the one behind the one in 21-1.
You had the amazing Paul Heyman with him as well. You had the perfect machine in Brock Lesnar to do anything you want. Someone was going to beat him eventually. We all know this. We're not stupid. Someone was going to beat Brock Lesnar, and someone was going to be the conqueror of the conqueror.
So,
but Bill Goldberg? All for what? To sell a video game?
Hey,
are you out of your fucking minds?
You know what, though? All of you guys wanted this match.
You wanted Goldberg. You know what? I even said I like Goldberg as a nostalgic reason. And you know what? If he was going to beat Brock Lesnar, you know what? At least let it be some form of a competitive match. Have it be something where you can sell us like, oh, hey, the beast can be conquered. The beast is mortal. No, you squash him in less than 2 minutes.
Well, okay. Now, the reason that was given for why that happened, I mean, they had to protect Goldberg a bit because his shoulder was tweaked, and they didn't want to make him like have a worse injury because they signed him to work Royal Rumble. That was the reason given.
That was after. We found out he was working the Royal Rumble after the fact. We didn't know going into this.
Yeah, we didn't know going into it, yeah. So, like, they're feeling rage. Like, it makes more sense that they did that after finding that news out. But at the time...
No,
like,
it doesn't make sense at all.
No, I mean,
it does not make sense.
No, the shoulder injury, though, being the reason why they made it a short match, does. But at the same time, so now what they're going to have to do, because there's going to be a rematch between the two. I'm pretty sure Brock's going to eliminate Goldberg from the Rumble.
I don't know why WWE only put up a minute of the match. I mean, you might as well have the whole fucking matchup.
I thought that was the whole matchup. I'm pretty sure Brock Lesnar and Goldberg entrances were 3 times longer than the match itself. That's fucking sad.
Yeah, you see Goldberg push him down, dominate. Okay, cool. Oh, look, a spear. Oh, Lesnar's so going to kick out, and Lesnar's going to be shocked.
Oh, wait, he's not. He's going to go for another spear.
Oh, well, WWE did pull up the whole match.
Yeah, I was going to say the whole match is a minute. Like, it wasn't that long.
You could fill this whole match in an Instagram video. This was the sort of dominating performance that you would see from Ronda Rousey or Conor McGregor. Knocking out people left and right. You teased us, and you eventually sort of sold us on this. Now, see, they didn't upload the whole thing.
Hey, hey. They didn't get, like, the pin?
Yeah. You sell us on Fantasy Warfare becomes reality. Survivor Series.
That really was their tagline? I didn't know that, considering I didn't hear every commentator or announcer say the line every time the match.
Saw Goldberg come out, and he had a special little name tag. It's like it appears in the video game. If you wanted to see a great competitive Goldberg-Brock Lesnar match, play the video game. But no, instead we got the I can't believe I'm saying this. We got the complete burial of Brock Lesnar. The complete and total wiping of every major incredible thing that Brock Lesnar has done for the WWE in the past 2 years. One fell swoop, gone. Taker streak, ending that the legendary Taker streak. Irrelevant at this point. That dominating SummerSlam match against John Cena, gone. All of those dominating victories over everyone he faced and everyone that went in front of him, gone. Why? Oh, you just pay Bill Goldberg a fuckload of money and Goldberg comes in and squashes him. Completely undone what they did with Brock Lesnar.
No, I don't think...
And I can't believe they have to rebuild him now. And I know you and I may disagree on this, but there's nothing you could say that will convince me otherwise that Brock Lesnar, he needs to be restored now. And I can't believe I'm saying this. A part-timer attraction like Brock Lesnar needs to be rebuilt and resold and repackaged. And how they do that is Goldberg's going to be in the Royal Rumble now. We know this. He confirmed Lesnar, it on Monday Night Raw.
Lesnar needs to eliminate him from the Royal Rumble. That's
not only that. Lesnar,
and then he needs to give a vicious beating.
Thank you.
In WrestleMania.
Thank you. I will agree with that. Lesnar needs to give Goldberg an monumental beating of some sort.
The problem with how they booked the match is now it makes most of the main people on the roster look weak. Granted, it's like Cena, but still, like, it makes a lot of people look weak. So it does nothing for the actual roster. It was essentially giving Goldberg a win. They should have had Lesnar actually win the match, by the way, because then you can do the rubber match, because, like, Goldberg won the last time they faced each other. So
that snoozer.
This match made me pine for that snoozer.
I can't believe I would say I would rather watch that WrestleMania 20 Z match again.
Well, because at least that Stone Cold Survivor, Steve Austin stunnering both participants.
This Survivor Series, if you even want to call it a match, just made me miss their WrestleMania 20 match. And made me want to watch it again.
Literally, the first thought in my mind was, remember WrestleMania 20 when Goldberg... I
even tweeted this. Well, at least we did want to see one last classic Goldberg match.
Right? Yeah. I mean, hey, spear.
Come in, do it. Spear, taunt, jackhammer, goodbye.
Spear, jackhammer, pin. Like, that's a goal.
Michael Cole would have said vintage Goldberg.
Yeah, stupid Cole. I could say vintage Orton. Well, vintage Goldberg. I mean, here's the thing, though. But people are getting worked up over the fact that Brock Lesnar is now buried. But, like,
Which he is.
A lot of people had no problem, though, when he buried a good chunk of the roster.
You have to sell it. If you're paying Brock Lesnar that much money and Brock Lesnar draws that much, you need to have him be the unstoppable monster. You have to have him be shown to be, wow, you do not want to go against this guy or else you will get killed. And you know what? What other performer, what other athlete on the WWE's roster can say that they were once a UFC heavyweight champion? The guy can really legitimately kill everyone on that roster. And what did they do? They had Bill Goldberg tweak his shoulder on a non-wrestling environment and say, oh, Goldberg's, he's not in ring shape anymore. So we're going to have him squash you.
That makes about as much sense as, hey, CM Punk, we're going to give you a big SummerSlam match, but you're going to be losing to Lesnar, another part-timer. I know, you're tired of losing to part-timers, but you're losing to this part-timer.
I know,
last big pay-per-view you lost to a part-timer, and the last big pay-per-view before that, you also lost to a part-timer, but just do us a solid, buddy. Do us a solid.
You can do it.
You can do it. Don't worry. You'll still be in the company in a year from now, and we'll give you that main event. We promise.
You won't try to be a real fighter.
Yeah, you won't try to be in UFC.
By this time next year. You won't try to be a real fighter.
You won't have to worry about facing Mickey Gall in the UFC next year. Don't worry about it, buddy. You'll
be fine. Mickey Gall? He got his ass kicked by Mickey Gall.
Well, I mean, he was facing him, like, standing forward before the match started.
By the way, you see that Punk called Ariel Helwani's show... And said that he thinks that his second fight will be in the UFC. That's good. I didn't hear a good joke this week. That was a real good one.
He thinks his second fight will be in the UFC.
He thinks he can actually win in the UFC. That would be like if me saying, oh yeah, I played once or twice in high school football. Let me play defensive end for the Packers. What do you want with how bad the Packers defense is? I might actually get the gig.
Yeah, you might be an upgrade over BJ Raji.
Ugh. Point.
So, I mean, you might be able to protect Aaron Rodgers' blind side.
I probably can.
You would.
But, okay. Final thoughts on Goldberg. I mean, I know this is...
I mean,
we're going to see Goldberg compete in the Royal Rumble. And the way that to have this, and Mike, see if you agree with me on this. Here's how I think that this storyline should go out and what makes the most sense for both of them and how to restore Brock Lesnar.
All right.
Goldberg, because we're not going to see Goldberg and Lesnar until the Rumble.
No,
we're not going to see
all.
That.
Yeah, they're going to
Goldberg
be...
enters. He dominates. Brock Lesnar comes in. They just have a bout in the ring. They eliminate other people. They eliminate more competitors.
Yeah. Then they turn their sights to each other, and they look
Lesnar
lovingly
eliminates
each other's
Goldberg.
Eyes.
Or Goldberg comes in, dominates. Lesnar sneaks into the match. Is even officially entered and eliminates Goldberg. All we know is Lesnar, the next time these two meet, Lesnar has to get the upper hand and I'd say absolute manhandling of Goldberg. Yeah, take him to Suplex City back and forth several times.
Like, he needs to suplex him so much that Heyman just keeps saying suplex repeat on a loop.
Yes.
For an hour.
No eating and sleeping, just suplexing.
Suplex repeat. Suplex repeat. Suplex repeat.
That sets up the rematch at like, WrestleMania 33, which I assume is going to be either the co-main or it's going to be the co-main.
Have him do so many suplexes that you say, fuck Suplex City, bring him to Suplex County.
Yes. Yes. And that's where Lesnar gets the upper hand. Goldberg cannot gain the upper hand on this feud once. For the rest of time, Lesnar has to completely dominate. You show that, then maybe you can resell me that Brock Lesnar really is the beast, the conqueror, the one that ended the streak, the one that dominates everybody. You have to sell me again because you have to rebuild Brock Lesnar from the ground up.
Make Lesnar great again.
I didn't want to insert the Trump pun there, that as easy as it was, but you have to make Lesnar great again.
Which means they'll do the same old shit because they won't drain the swamp. They'll just keep the swamp there.
Are we going to do this show with Trump puns?
Yep.
Is that what we're going to do?
Yes, we are.
So
with that out of the way, that's one of the enraging things. But so I mean,
that's one of the few enraging things this week.
The actual Survivor Series matches like were not bad.
They weren't bad. Like I said, mediocre at best. I will be proud and say that I got the predictions correct on the Survivor Series matches. I saw Raw winning the women's and the tag team. We got that, and the SmackDown winning the main men's match. And I got that. And you know what? I'm sorry. One great thing did happen to Survivor Series. My boy, Bray Wyatt, got a major pin on the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the one thing I cheered for at Survivor Series. I was happy.
He got the final pin, I believe, on Roman Reigns, which made him the most popular babyface of the night.
That was Bray Wyatt's face turn, if you ask me.
Oh my God, the fans were not behind Roman Reigns at all.
Okay, I lied. There were two amazing things that happened at Survivor Series. Bray Wyatt getting the pin, which I am a very biased Bray Wyatt fan. For him to get the pin like that was just,
phenoms.
Didn't want to use the AJ Styles pun, but it was awesome to watch. And the total evisceration Roman Reigns got from that Canadian crowd. I love you, Canada. Oh, Canada, indeed. You destroyed Roman Reigns, and I love
actually,
it.
Actually, another thing, too. Like, Cesaro had a pretty good moment for the tag match.
And as we'll talk about later on Monday Night Raw, that booing continued for Reigns, and boy, did they continue to cheer for Owens and Chris Jericho.
Yep, and Cesaro. They were the three most popular people.
I was not complaining with the crowd selection of cheering and booing. Yeah. We had some great crowds this past week.
AJ also had huge reactions, too. Like
I said, the Canadian crowds, I think, are a lot smarter than most American crowds. And they were hot, and they were into the matches, which, you know what? When it's all said and done, the crowds kept me interested in most of what happened this week in WWE programming. The only thing that the wrestling really kept me into the whole time was NXT. NXT TakeOver.
Oh, God, it was so good. I could go on for hours about TakeOver, but we don't have hours. They were hot from the start. Like, Bobby Roode's entrance was fantastic. They had a church choir singing just... Glorious, glorious. Like, just the glorious part, and then Bobby Roode came out like in his robe with almost like smoke on the floor there, like fog, like as if he was walking from the clouds. And it was just amazing. Like, again, a great entrance. Roode is going to be one of the guys that they wind up going all out for when it comes to entrances, because the glory, like the song "Glorious," like you need to have, like, for the takeover specials, great entrances. Here we go. Drink it in, man.
The gift of Bobby Roode.
Sing it in, man.
Okay, this is a very pun intended, glorious entrance.
It is. No, we'll give it. And the crowd is just singing along the whole time. They need to just hotshot him to the main roster ASAP.
Out of all the themes that CFOS did, this might be my favorite.
CFOS has a, like, I think CFOS has replaced Jim Johnson as the...
Think they replaced him?
Like,
replaced him.
They had them both doing, like, the same, like, the themes, like, here and there, like, splitting time, but now, like, CFOS is just taking over. But yeah, that's one of
the... Pun intended there for NXT TakeOver. Mm-hmm. I think the only other entrance I could think of from TakeOver that really made me go, wow, was Nakamura's entrance. And I know we're focusing a little too much maybe on the entrances here, but man, Nakamura's entrance.
The chorus of just violinists.
Yeah, the chorus of violinists there. And not to mention, it's amazing that the crowd mics were louder in the mix of the show than the violins, because that's how loud the audience was cheering for Nakamura.
Oh.
Again, this might be one of my favorites as well. CFOS has done some amazing work entrance music. But while we're on the subject of NXT, Mike, what were your general thoughts? I have ideas about the main event, but what did you think of the undercard?
The best match of the night by far was the tag title match. It's like I know the thought after the Brooklyn one was that the best tag match in a while was DIY versus the Revival. This match Saturday night topped it. It amped up from a wrestling level, from a drama level. For those who remember the Brooklyn match, it was a leg lock submission that Johnny Gargano tapped out to. At one point during one of the late in the match, they had Gargano in the same type of hold, and they milked the moment of him grabbing the ropes. Like, they milked it for the biggest effect. And I agree with people when they say Gargano has the potential to be the next Daniel Bryan in the way that he's, like, very good at being the sympathetic babyface. Like, he plays that role well. And when they eventually do break up DIY, that feud is going to be a watershed moment for NXT. I mean, and so, like, there were some great sequences. Like, for example, now you notice the Revival wearing the Hart Foundation colors because Scott Dawson actually was a fan of Bret Hart growing up and they were in Canada. But at one point in the match, they did the Hart Attack, which was the Hart Foundation finishing move. There was a sequence where, like, they tried to do DIY's finisher and had a miscue, and DIY then did the Revival's finisher, not for the win or a fall, but just to try to get the falls in, and then had a cool double submission finish where both members of the Revival tapped out to, different locks by Gargano and Ciampa. But it was a great moment. It had one of the biggest, them winning had one of the biggest reactions of the night. And I'm just glad to see that they're now the tag champions.
I will say this, if we're having a, because I know we're at the end of the year at our Brain Stew Awards, we're going to award our match of the year. if we were going to have a tag team match of the year,
this would be it.
You can't not have this match as your tag team match of the year. This was everything you love. Here's the thing about NXT overall, and I know you're going to agree with me on this. Mm-hmm. If you fell out of love with professional wrestling, if you somehow got out of pro wrestling, or you just like, oh, I don't know, is it still good? Watch NXT TakeOver from this past weekend, and then you'll be reminded, oh, that's why I love wrestling. That's why I love this perfect combination of sport and entertainment and emotion. The most incredible soap opera you can watch on a weekly basis. Watch NXT TakeOver, and then you'll fall in love with wrestling all over again.
There were no bad matches. The only thing that I wish had went a different way was the Dusty Rhodes Invitational. I'm not that into the Authors of Pain. They had a really good match with TM61, but I think TM61 should have won that. They kind of deserve the rub a little more. But like the opening match, Bobby Roode versus Ty Dillinger was great.
Every single match was awesome.
And Oscar versus Mickey James was a really good match.
Yeah, returning Mickey James. And I'm pretty sure Mickey James's return was a one-off.
Yeah. It was supposed to be Trish Stratus in that spot, but she was pregnant, so they went Mickey James, who was, you know, Trish's stalker for a little bit. But
Mickey James, she still got it.
Yeah. It was a really good match. And I think they're going to turn Asuka heel so she can feud with some of the face women in NXT.
I mean, it was right that Asuka won.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't want a returning. If Mickey James ended up winning that, I would have been like, okay, but is she really back full time? Because she's still doing, she is a country music artist now, too.
Yeah.
So she's touring, being a country singer.
She wasn't going to stay like that long.
And anyway, I think she still is a TNA knockout as well, if memory serves. So,
no, she's gone.
Oh, she is gone from TNA. Yeah. Okay. Because for the longest time, I thought she was still with TNA. But
nope.
Mickey James does a lot of indie dates. So I was glad to see her back. It was glad to see that she could still go. And she still looks fantastic. So hopefully we may see her again in the WWE. But for a one-off and a one-time return, I'm not complaining. It was a great match.
Yeah.
And she put Asuka over. Because that Canadian crowd was very behind Mickey James as well. And if you were watching Twitter, they were behind Mickey James and they were behind Asuka as well. And the ladies delivered.
Oh, they always deliver. The women's division in NXT, no matter who's in the matches, typically have some of the best matches of the weekend.
So that main event, main event, you know what? With it being Thanksgiving, I want to reveal one of the things I'm thankful for WWE. And that's, I am thankful that in 2016, as someone who's been watching professional wrestling for close to 25 years now, WWE can still surprise me. I thought, going into this, I'm like, Nakamura is so winning this match. Nakamura is going to win this. Joe is going to have a moment to, maybe off camera, say thank you to the NXT fans,
and then
or
make
just
his
take
way
a
to
bow
the main roster.
And go to the main roster. But no, Samoa Joe in a very good match wins the NXT title. He becomes the first man, I think, to win the NXT title twice.
Absolutely,
first person to hold the NXT title twice. Which I appreciate NXT for. They're doing what Ring of Honor does, and very, very rarely you have a two-time champion.
Yep. It's very rare. I mean, I think Ring of Honor just had one of their first two-time champions recently, only recently.
It's very rare that Ring of Honor gives you a two-time champion, and we see our first two-time NXT champion in Samoa Joe. You have Samoa Joe now being a two-time NXT champion. He's obviously staying down in NXT at least until maybe Royal Rumble or WrestleMania.
I would say probably then, yeah. He's actually defending against Nakamura in a couple weeks in Japan.
I think it makes the most sense if he drops the title in Florida, because, you know, we very rarely talk about TNA here because it's mostly abysmal at this point, but, and I would much rather drink bleach, but TNA's fan base, they did a whole lot of shows in Florida, and I think it makes the most sense for if Samoa Joe is to go up to the main roster, he stays as NXT champion until TakeOver Orlando and drops the title to whoever, and he takes a swan song in NXT and then goes to the main roster. Or debuts at WrestleMania.
Now, for those of you who are wondering, Ring of Honor has been around since the early 2000s. Like, the Ring of Honor Championship, or Ring of Honor World Championship, has been around since July 2002. Their first repeat champion was 2009. Their second repeat champion was 2014, and their third was 2016.
So there's only been three two-time Ring of Honor champions.
Three out of 23 reigns were people who were like second title runs.
And that's a pretty decent number too. 23 times the title changed hands in over 10 years.
And those three, those three champions, Adam Cole, who's the current champion, Jay Briscoe, and currently on NXT, Austin Aries.
Only three two-time Ring of Honor champions.
People who were not given like second reigns, but won the championship, includes Samoa Joe, Bryan Danielson, who we all know as Daniel Bryan, Kevin Steen.
No name, if you ask me.
he'll always fight, unlike The Miz. Kevin Steen, also known as Kevin Owens. Tyler Black, also known as Seth Rollins. Roderick Strong, who's known by that name because he uses his indie name on WWE, and CM Punk all have only had it once.
That's a pretty impressive roster.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty impressive list of former champions. And you have guys like Samoa Joe and CM Punk. They've only held that title once.
I mean, granted, Samoa Joe's reign was like 645 days. Like, he held that. And like Daniel Bryan's was like 460 days. Around
what we're saying is Ring of Honor has very lengthy and meaningful title reigns, and when a Ring of Honor champion loses and the title changes hands,
moment.
It's a very big moment.
Since CM Punk's title reign only lasted 55 days, it was more ceremonial because he was about to leave, and they did that for the Summer of Punk. But like Samoa Joe, in those 645 days, had 29 defenses.
I would put the NXT title in that same kind of category where I wouldn't say the NXT title is as prestigious as the Ring of Honor title, but the way that they're treating it and how meaningful it is when the title changes hands, I give a lot of credit and a lot of respect to Triple H for handling NXT the way a professional wrestling show should be handled.
Oh, and for those who are wondering the same stats for the NXT title, First title reign, first champion for it was in July 2012. That was Seth Rollins. First two-time champion was Samoa Joe in November 2016. So it's been 4 years. I mean, WWE does seem like that's forever for a two-time champion in WWE times. First one was Seth Rollins, who held it for 133 days. Second champion was Big E Langston, who held it for 168 days. Third was Bo Dallas, who held it for 280 days. Adrian Neville held it for 287 days. Then Sami Zayn held it for about 62 days, and then lost it to Kevin Owens, who held it for 143 days. What we're saying is they have lengthy reigns too. Owens lost it to Balor, who held it for 292 days before losing the title to Samoa Joe, who lost to Nakamura, and then who lost to Samoa Joe.
Lengthy reigns, I'm not going to lie, but if they want to compete with at least Ring of Honor as far as having prestige to the championship, they got to have lengthier reigns than that.
To be fair, though, like these are guys that they're grooming for their main roster.
Absolutely, yeah.
So they don't have the luxury of getting to have guys hold the title for like 600 days.
But I give WWE credit for at least treating the NXT division the way that, like, hey, this is a big deal here.
This reminds me, too, like, a couple things. Like, NXT, for example, I feel like they're almost like an indie fed, but with a bigger production budget. That's what NXT feels like to
me. NXT is Ring of Honor with a very good budget.
And a good chunk of Ring of Honor's former roster. Like,
so that's why I said it's Ring of
Honor. Like everyone's like, oh, they're just getting NXT mid-carders. But the thing is, though, like, a lot of those NXT mid-carders, or like NXT former champions, however you want to say it, most of them started out in Ring of Honor. Or were there before NXT, for TNA. I mean, yeah, they've got other people, too, aside from former Ring of Honor people, but, like, a good chunk of their main core, like I will name some names very quickly, and they also just recently signed Tommy End from the indie scene as well, but, like, Tommaso Ciampa has wrestled in Ring of Honor. Shinsuke Nakamura had some matches there. Samoa Joe, Roderick Strong.
AJ Styles.
He didn't go to NXT, though. He went right to the main roster. Rich Swann was, I don't know if he did Ring of Honor, but he was CZW at one point, and probably PWG and other federations. Bobby Roode is TNA. Austin Aries, well known for being, like I said, the first two-time Ring of Honor champion. They're like some of the main guys in WWE, people who have had experience in Ring of Honor. And I'm sure Gargano has even wrestled in Ring of Honor at one point. I mean, he's pretty much wrestled in every indie fed known to man. And then again, you've got Tommy End, who might not have been in Ring of Honor, but he wrestled in a couple of the bigger federations like CZW, Evolve, PWG. So, like, they're getting some of the best of the indies, and it's making NXT amazing.
So we shared our thoughts on a few of the matches. I would give NXT TakeOver Toronto a solid 8.5.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
It was far better than Survivor Series, which it's kind of scary when all these big pay-per-views happen and NXT outshines them every single time.
Oh, absolutely. Every single time.
TakeOver Dallas outshined WrestleMania, apart from the Women's Triple Threat. Every single NXT TakeOver show outshines whatever main roster pay-per-view happens the night after. And with that, let's transition a little bit from WWE. A little bit. And go this week in the indies. Mike, what happened in the indie scene this past week?
And, all right, so this week in the indies, for example, we've got this. So in Ring of Honor, Will Ospreay defeated Bobby Fish to become the new Ring of Honor TV champion. In Lucha Underground, Sexy Star became the Lucha Underground champion. That was actually taped one in advance. Like, she's not the current champion, but it was just televised last week. And Davey Richards, who right now is in TNA, but was also in the indies for a long time, especially another Ring of Honor guy, and part of the American Wolves, he actually has stated that he's going to be retiring at the end of 2017. He's 33, so he's not that old by wrestling standards. I mean, you've got Bobby Roode, who is in his, let's just say he's in his late 30s. He's definitely older. But Davey Richards has decided that he's going to be retiring after this year. So, again, making it quick because we also got other things to mention and talk about. But those were the top things about the indies and international this week. Sexy Star, I'll go back to that, was a big deal because I believe she's the first female champion in Lucha Underground. So, that's going to... I mean, all right, at the time, because she did lose it since then, but that's actually a big deal. I think she might be the first female to have had the top championship for any federation. Like, the top, like, not like a secondary, but the top championship.
It would be like if Bayley won the WWE World Championship.
Yeah, or Bayley or Sasha or, you know. So, that wraps up this week in the indies.
So, let's transition now to Monday Night Raw recap.
All right.
Let's finish up Raw and SmackDown, give our thoughts on the major stories going around in the world of WWE, and then call tonight with... Because Thanksgiving is tomorrow, and I want to eat some goddamn turkey.
Yeah.
All right. Raw recap. I want to say that this week Raw was a better overall show than SmackDown for reasons I will explain later. Raw was more enjoyable to watch this week. What are you think?
I mean, Raw and SmackDown, I think, were both equally enjoyable, which is actually a compliment this time. Because this Raw felt more like a SmackDown in all the best possible ways.
Right, yeah. There were one or two memorable, very funny moments from Monday Night Raw this week.
Yes.
One being that segment with Jericho and Kevin Owens.
By the way, one thing that I'm thankful for, Team Chris and Kevin.
That's another one that we could all be thankful for. So what happened here was Chris Jericho comes out with his highlight reel, says he knows why Team Raw lost. And Kevin Owens comes out, and we're thinking, oh my God, no, are they really doing this? The greatest thing that's going on Monday Night Raw, and you're going to break them up? No!
They, I was like, fuck, they're doing it.
Owens and Jericho had a will they, won't they, and this is how that played out.
For us losing at Survivor Series last night.
So do I.
Yeah, I do too.
I know
exactly who it was.
Why don't you say who it is?
You want me to say it?
Say it.
You want me to say whose fault it was?
Say it.
You know, I'm not even going to say it. I'm disgusted by this. I'm finished with this conversation, and Kevin Owens, I'm finished with you.
No. I'll tell you whose fault it is.
Because at this point, we're thinking, oh my God, are they really going to do this?
They sold it perfect.
Roman Reigns!
This might go down as one of the greatest moments in bromance history.
No, notice, Kevin Owens was saying in Jericho's ear, we got him. We killed it.
It was great. That to me is the best segment of the night by far. These two guys are heels, but they're the biggest faces on Monday Night Raw and probably in WWE.
They
are hysterically a complete opposite of what they should be. They're heels, but they're totally faces.
Like, and it's funny.
And if you listen to this crowd, man, the crowds at wherever Owens and Jericho go,
they are always
the most cheered.
They're consistently the most over people, like on there. And they're the heels. They're the top heels. And again, they're good at being heels, just like they've gotten to a point where they can act like they're going to act like heels and get cheers. They're going to be like technically heels, but feel more like tweeners.
So after Seth Rollins comes out and inevitably starts beating up on Owens and Jericho, gain the upper hand. But one of our favorite things to do on this show, guys, is to play Roman Reigns booze. And Canada, you delivered tenfold.
Seth Rollins made his intentions clear. Now reality sets in for Owens and Jericho.
A gutsy move by Rollins, but not necessarily the smartest one, because Rollins is on the wrong end of four.
Wait a minute.
There were Roman sucks chants going on last on Survivor Series. They were they were booing him every step of the way. Like, for those of you wondering, like, he is so unpopular at this point, they made him stop doing the traditional Shield entrance, which is through the crowd.
The only time people even remotely booed Roman, even remotely cheered for Reigns, was that temporary Shield reunion at Survivor Series, where they triple powerbombed Styles through that table. That was the only time Roman got cheered.
Actually, one other time, and that was the other temporary Shield reunion in the four-way match, when it was Ambrose versus Rollins versus Reigns versus Randy Orton, and they triple powerbombed Randy Orton through a table.
So that's the only thing I want to really highlight from Raw this week. We talked about Goldberg. He announced he's going to be in the Royal Rumble. The matches themselves were it's par course of what you expect from Monday Night Raw. The most entertained I've ever been on Raw in quite some time was that segment between Owens and Jericho, which leads me to the big topic, because we're talking about how Monday Night Raw and SmackDown Live have pretty thin rosters. With how much talent WWE has, the lack of marketable talent and lack of talent that's ready to be in the main event spot or even top of the mid-card spot, it's thin. I mean, it shows when when the cruiserweights need as much time as they get and they still can't deliver, Shane McMahon is one of the key components of Team SmackDown at Survivor Series, and we're seeing the multiple programs over and over again at this point.
Let me just point out, it's not that the cruiserweights are not delivering. They're having great matches. The problem is they're not getting enough time to develop people on the cruiserweight roster.
Right.
They give fans a reason to give a shit.
They're just thrown there and hoping that it sticks, and it's just not sticking.
And they're also hoping that every single fan saw the Cruiserweight Classic.
I mean, you want to see the cruiserweights in the form that they should be seen in. It's the Cruiserweight Classic. And I'm hoping
205
when 205 Live comes around, the cruiserweights are going to be more involved and they'll have their own chance to build up a storyline, maybe cross over the Raw or SmackDown.
Which I want to point out, Rich Swann, the new number one contender for the Cruiserweight title. And
he's going to face the man with the plan.
I think he's going to win. It's being held forward, Swan. I think they wanted
God willing, because I want him to beat every frontman from every 80s tribute band ever in Brian Kendrick.
Hey, he's a former WWE champion, but not officially because he only held it for a couple minutes in the scramble match. But I think they're definitely going to. I think they tried with TJ Perkins, but Perkins is too boring. And just
he reminded me a lot of Randy Orton.
Yeah, although he had a flashy entrance, a cool theme, and he's great in ring. Just he's no personality.
Yeah, so Randy Orton.
Yeah, but no personality whatsoever.
Randy Orton.
Yeah. Well, typically though, if he was like Randy Orton, they would just push him to the moon and not care.
I mean, the more I think about it, the more Randy Orton with the Wyatt family makes perfect sense because he doesn't have to show personality. But with Raw. Leads me to a question. You have Kevin Owens as your Universal Champion. Someone's going to beat him eventually. Someone's going to take over Owens.
Yeah.
Someone's going to win that title from him. The question I have for you, Mike, is who? I have an idea, but I'll hear you out first because let's go over the list of possibilities, likely possibilities.
All right.
You have Braun Strowman, I think, if WWE wants to do the monster heel push or whatever. You have Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, Chris Jericho.
I'm saying none of them.
I would say if you need a time to push him now more than ever, you put Cesaro in there. To me, those are the five possibilities.
They won't, because I think he's going to SmackDown.
Those are my five possibilities, and one of those is my pick, but who say you?
Finn Balor. Here's my defense on that. Finn Balor was at an indie event this weekend. No Sling got physically involved in the match. He's slated to return, not at Roadblock, but he's expected to return at the Royal Rumble. My money would go on the fact that
he was never pinned. He was never defeated for it.
My money's on that he's going to win the Royal Rumble, which is the rumored plan, and he'll face Kevin Owens at WrestleMania, where he will beat Kevin Owens for the title. That gives Kevin Owens a nice lengthy title run, from September until April.
It legitimizes the title.
Legitimize the title. They kind of want to make Finn Balor the face of Raw. If you look at I sent Hammy a picture of the current Raw TV trucks the trucks they use, and there's four people on the trucks. Brock Lesnar, which is to be expected, but then you've got Finn Balor, who they're trying to make the top babyface. Sasha Banks, which is a big good sign for her. And Rich Swann is on there.
That's a pretty diverse selection.
Yeah, so I think they're going to go with... I honestly think it's going to be Finn Balor beating Kevin Owens at WrestleMania for the title.
That is the more than likely way it should go. But hear me out and why I want this to kind of happen. I want Roman Reigns to beat him and be a double champion. And I will explain why. Roman Reigns is already the most heelish heel in the company. Everyone legitimately hates him. He should be heel. He absolutely should be a heel. And to further solidify him as a heel, again, hear me out. You put him as a double champion, and you already see how he, every little tiny things that he does that just get under people's skin, like even holding the title wrong. He doesn't have the title on his shoulder like the way Owens holds it, or how any other champion holds it. He holds a strap like it's a backpack. Imagine him doing that with both the U.S. and the world and the Universal title. Even going back to the Believe That, the nuclear heat that would get on Roman Reigns, and to pull the trigger of him being a heel. There's your new top heel on Monday Night Raw. And that's why I think you want a real legit heel. The crowd already hates him. The crowd already boos him. You really want to pull that trigger and really make Roman Reigns the top heel in your company. You already got the hard part done. Now give him the title and make him say the goofy things he used to. And man, and you could put anyone against him. You want to turn someone face? You go against heel champion Roman Reigns. You'll be the face by default.
I honestly don't think they have the balls to pull heel turn on Reigns.
I know they won't, and it most likely won't happen, but that's my pick. I would love to see a double champion Roman Reigns just so everyone, all wrestling fans around the world, will boo at Roman Reigns. That would be perfect to me. But I think your idea is the more than likely scenario. I like that idea.
Yeah, I think that's what's going to end up happening.
But you never know. Goldberg can win the Rumble.
Oh God, no!
With how much they're paying Goldberg, from what I read, it is a lot.
Oh no!
I didn't see any specific numbers, but Goldberg is being estimated to be paid truckload of money for every match they work. And apparently, the contract that he signed with WWE. They can keep him for however long they want, but if they want him to compete in other matches, they need to pay the cover charge to get Goldberg in a match. And with how much buzz people had around Goldberg, both positively and negatively, I mean, us wrestling fans who watch it every week can see that Survivor Series was a disgusting mess of a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
But you look at ESPN, you look at all of the local sports channels, that match got coverage. It got mainstream publicity. Vince McMahon loves and craves public publicity.
What Hammy's saying is ESPN didn't get the point, much like people making fun of Lin-Manuel Miranda for talking to Mike Pence. But people are not getting the point of why that match was so terrible.
They don't get it, but they see publicity and they see web traffic. They're going to keep pulling that trigger. So,
yeah.
Who knows? Goldberg can possibly walk out of WrestleMania with the title. And that's something I really don't want. I don't want to see Goldberg anywhere near the title picture. I want to see him in the Royal Rumble, Lesnar costing him the Rumble, Lesnar beating the holy hell out of Goldberg, and setting up the match at WrestleMania where Goldberg loses to Lesnar. He retires, he walks out, he has his WrestleMania moment, and Lesnar further solidifies himself as the dominant person on Raw again. That's how it should go.
That's how it should go. I kind of... So, and one other thing I want to point out, like I said, we mentioned Cesaro being like strong earlier in Survivor Series. They had a tag title match on Raw with the New Day. That was announced on Survivor Series. And they lost. I've noticed they're having the New Day kind of heal it up a bit sometimes.
Yeah, I see. The New Day have technically never turned face.
They've
just been doing what they've always been doing, and the crowd has just been cheering for them.
Yeah.
So I like that the New Day's doing little heelish things. And if you saw on Raw, they got booed a little bit as well.
They did. Well, I think I think the fans were booing when they started mocking Demolition.
Yeah, that's a big thing. I mean, we all know the New Day is going to break the record.
Yeah. I think once they started making fun of Demolition, the Canadian fans are like have respect for old school wrestling as well. Once they started mocking Demolition, that's when the boos started coming. Before that, they were all in the New Day train.
Right. who beats the New Day, though? I mean, I asked a question about who beats Owens. Who beats the New Day? I think it's time now. I mean, we have a tag team championship match coming up soon between Gallows and Anderson and the New Day, and we both know that Gallows and Anderson are going to lose.
Again,
this is just further burial and dismantle of Gallows and Anderson. Man, they came into WWE with a lot of hype behind them. They came in with a lot of motivation and a lot of fans going like, oh my God, yes, they're here, they're here.
Yeah, that attack on the Usos was fantastic.
But Gallows and Anderson, they're just there. No, and they're not even there in a good way.
They've been rebuilding them.
So let's transition to SmackDown, where...
Oh, wait, before we do that, though, to tie into SmackDown, after the match, Cesaro made a tweet saying, I'm tired of it.
Furthering the trade furthering the trade rumor that he could eventually go to SmackDown.
And then Daniel Bryan responded to, let me get the exact response, because Daniel Bryan, again, every time something happens with Cesaro that like is kind of sketchy and he tweets about it, Daniel Bryan says the following: coming over to hashtag SmackDown Live might make you less tired.
So it's going to happen.
They are hyping that so much.
They're hyping a potential trade for Cesaro, and
yeah,
I support it.
I do too. I think it's the wrestling show. He should be on the wrestling show.
Yes, the real wrestling show in WWE. But now I'm glad you transitioned to SmackDown, because I have got a very big problem. I have a giant pimple on my ass, and that pimple's name is James Ellsworth.
All right.
I have never seen someone be so out of place, so undeserving, and so not necessary for a storyline than James Ellsworth being involved with AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose. This, to see James Ellsworth in the main event picture, is as insulting as seeing CM Punk on the main card of a UFC pay-per-view. He doesn't belong there. Sure, he does a little independent things. And sure, he may have been wrestling on the independent circuit for quite some time. I don't even know. But to push a guy and to keep a jobber involved with a major storyline just because he's a hot ticket viral sensation is both lazy and disrespectful and, quite frankly, embarrassing for the longtime fans that want to see great wrestling and a great program. Because, look, Mike, I know in the long run, win-loss records don't mean jack in pro wrestling. The only win-loss record that really mattered was the Undertaker streak. That's the only win-loss record that mattered. But James Ellsworth, with what happened on SmackDown Live this week, he now has not one, not two, but three victories over the reigning WWE champion, AJ Styles. And yes, he had help from the outside. But what does that say? And I'm asking you this now. What does this say that Ellsworth is being involved with AJ Styles? What does that say about Styles and the title?
Doesn't say anything about Styles and the title. Not at all.
Love to hear your argument why.
It doesn't make him any weaker. They actually did a good job of protecting Styles in those three losses. The first one, for example, Dean Ambrose was the guest referee. Every time Styles had him pinned or had him tapping out, Ambrose made sure he was turned around doing something else, not watching what was going on, so thus he couldn't say that he saw it but didn't call for the bell. So there was that. And then at the end of that match, Ambrose did a fast count. Now we're seeing here in this third match, Ambrose comes in and attacks AJ Styles, and AJ had it won. And again, puts the screws to him. Now, the third match, I believe, was a DQ finish.
No, the third match was this.
No, I mean, second match was a DQ finish.
I believe so.
Yeah. So, like, we don't count disqualifications. I mean, yes, technically it's James Ellsworth beat AJ Styles, but if we're counting DQ finishes, there's a lot of upsets that technically happened. So no, I'm not counting that at all. But just it's like there's I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, again, AJ was attacked when he like had the match won most of those matches. And or screwed over via means involving Dean Ambrose, who is the face, but is acting a lot like a heel. And it's kind of one of those AJ getting egg yolk on his face for being too cocky and not pinning the guy when he should. But that's old style, like continuing a feud, especially one that's been going on for as long as AJ and Ambrose has been going on for. So, I mean, and then they have the finish here.
By the way, I'm sorry. I need to. James Ellsworth is so unable to do anything. Styles had to get in between the top and middle rope just to receive that. What do they call it?
No chin music.
Oh, my God. I mean, God.
Yeah, but no, he's done it with AJ standing, though. Like, it was just.
Oh, my God.
AJ had to be in that position so he could have his leg get tangled in the rope. Again. AJ's not losing in ways that make Ellsworth look strong. And AJ's not looking weak because AJ kind of has had the deck stacked against him every time. Like, whether it be because of Shane or because of Dean Ambrose, the deck has been stacked against AJ in every one of these Ellsworth matches. I think when Ellsworth gets the title opportunity, but yeah, Ellsworth, I believe AJ hit Ellsworth with the title and that got a DQ. Or it was something like that in the second match. But I think AJ will win this match against Ellsworth, showing, yeah, no, I am better than him. He is not better than me. I just beat him. And then he'll beat Ambrose at Tables, Ladders, and Chairs, and that'll be it. I honestly think, what I think would be a decent thing to do would be have Ellsworth turn heel and cost Ambrose the match, or have him inadvertently cost Ambrose the TLC match.
I will tell you why I disagree with that. First off, us as wrestling fans have been wanting to see AJ Styles in the WWE for a very, very long time. Styles finally comes to the WWE. He has a great program with Roman Reigns where even we were saying, all right, Roman isn't doing that bad in this. He had a fantastic program with John Cena, where he beat Cena clean at SummerSlam. That's up there with our match of the year. And all of us are like, okay, yes, thank you, AJ. Yes, we're loving AJ. He's even having a rivalry with Ambrose now. Okay, it's getting a little bit stale now because there's really no one on SmackDown.
They threw Cena in there, too, at one point.
And now he has to deal with James Ellsworth. I'm mortified at the possibility that Ellsworth, in a fluke win, even if it's just for a microsecond, can be the WWE World Champion. And you know what? Despite my biased dislike of Ellsworth, the bigger picture is, to me, the more important issue. How thin is that SmackDown roster where the only moderately funny segments are the old, okay, superstar getting kicked out of the arena. Like, where's he going to go? He's traveling with the company.
Yeah.
Like, where is he going to go? That old story, that hack storyline that's been done a million times. Ambrose being kicked out 5 or 6 times throughout the show. That Canadian Mountie bit. Like, oh, God.
They're reverting Ambrose back to being the wacky guy.
They're reverting Ambrose back from the lunatic that isn't a lunatic to the goofy Joker type. You know what he is? He's Cesar Romero's Joker. That's what he is. He has the big cartoony looking bomb that has a gun with the bang sign that comes out of it. He's not a lunatic. He's just a goofball. I'm tired of seeing goofball Ambrose facing Styles. I'm tired of seeing James Ellsworth getting involved with the storyline just for the sake of keeping the storyline going. And another big issue, I think Styles and Ambrose are the wrong characters. I think Styles should be the at the face, because just like how Roman Reigns should be the heel, Styles needs to be the face, because Styles is always cheered wherever he goes. He is a fan favorite. He gets cheered in every match he does, and he has to really try to get people to boo him.
By the way, I think another trade they should do, if they're going to make AJ be the heel, another trade they should do, something he like suggested on Twitter, Gallows and Anderson to SmackDown.
Yes.
And then you reunite the club, have them win the tag titles, and then you've got all of the gold with the club.
That's when I bought into Styles as a heel.
Yep.
Was when he had Gallows and Anderson behind
him. Hey, you know,
him.
Even without them, he was great as a heel for, and he still is, just...
He's trying. He's doing the best he can, but the fans love him too much for him to be a heel.
Yeah.
He has to turn face, and Ambrose, we know from his early days in the Shield, Ambrose can be a great heel. And he wants to be the lunatic? Well... You can't be the lunatic and dress as a Canadian Canadian Mountie.
And he'll tell Austin that he's playing in someone else's sandbox, but like, and that was that kind of annoyed me at Ambrose, because I don't think he realizes the way you get respect from Vince McMahon is you go to him, no, like, this is what I want to do. That's how Punk got respect from McMahon. Punk wrote 6 months worth of television, put it on McMahon's desk. McMahon didn't read it and went, okay, go with it. You're on SmackDown. You can get yourself creative license. You're tucked away there, Ambrose.
Like, you don't have to do what the writers write, because this screams WWE creative.
Yep. Or at least Vince overruling WWE creative.
And we know Ambrose, if he just channels that Johnny Moxley.
Yeah.
He can be the lunatic that we all know, because you want to see the real lunatic Ambrose? All right, look up John Moxley in CZW.
Toned down version, because they wouldn't let him be his full on John Moxley self.
Well, yes, of course not, but I would love to have a PG-13 John Moxley, because what we're getting right now is what you would see in a fucking Pixar movie as the bad guy. And SmackDown this week was just so unwatchable. The roster is thin. Ellsworth is being in the main event pictures that he should not be in at all.
You know, he's not in the main event picture. He was in the main event.
He's involved at the storyline. 5 or 6 segments of the show, we're seeing James Ellsworth. And I get it. I get why WWE's doing it, because they put that stupid mug of his on a shirt that's so lazily designed, yet it's on back order.
Yeah, because the whole Ellsworth thing went viral when he was squashed by Braun Strowman.
I mean, I don't know whether I should be angry that WWE is running with this, or the fact that the fans got over on this in the first place.
Well, fans are always weird as far as liking things, ironically.
I mean, we'll agree to disagree on the picture of James Ellsworth on SmackDown, but let's finish up the show tonight with things that we are thankful for in the world of pro wrestling.
Yes.
Because Thanksgiving's tomorrow, I'm ready to just... I don't have anything to do this weekend other than to stuff my fat face with turkey and relax. I am so looking forward to this. So let's end the show strong with what we're thankful for in the world of pro wrestling. I will start, like I said earlier in the show, I am thankful that even though I've been watching wrestling for nearly 25 years, WWE can still shock me. Whether it's in a good way or a bad way, WWE can still shock me.
One first thing I'm thankful for is Team Chris and Kevin. Because drink it in, man.
That's my number two as well.
my number two thing that I'm thankful for is the women's revolution. Like the Four Horsewomen, like... Maybe not as much Charlotte, but definitely like most of the Four Horsewomen. And the third thing I'm thankful for is the Glorious Bomb.
Yeah, that is one of the most viral things we saw on...
This year, yeah.
This year with...
Bobby Roode and DIY.
All right, the three things I am thankful for. Like I said, the fact that WWE, even after all these years, can still shock me, whether that's good or bad. Number two, I am thankful Tomorrow Rinaldo.
Yes.
Because the
can I do a fourth one for
quite some time, I thought, man, I really miss Jim Ross. I wish Jim Ross can come back. I wish Jim Ross can just commentate WrestleMania. I miss Jim Ross. Do anything to get him back. Now, I haven't thought about Jim Ross doing WWE commentary in quite some time
because
now.
Because Mauro is that
because
good.
Because Mauro Ranallo is that good.
Actually, fourth thing I'm thankful for, the fact that for 205 Live, the commentary team is going to be Corey Graves and Mauro Ranallo.
I'm going to watch 205 Live just for that. Just for that.
Corey Graves is the best dick heel commentator since CM Punk doing guest commentary.
And the third thing that I'm thankful for, and it's going to come as a little bit of a shock, I'm thankful to Vince McMahon. I'm thankful because no matter how bad your creative team writes your shows, Vince, you and the WWE give me a reason to watch every week, give us a reason to talk about it on our show, give us a reason to want to go to WrestleMania. I want to go to WrestleMania. I don't know what the card's going to be, and it's probably not going to be that great, but I want to go to WrestleMania. So to Vince McMahon, I am thankful for what you've done. I'm thankful that even though you tore your fucking quad off your leg.
Yeah, stop stealing Kevin Nash's finisher.
Yeah, stop stealing Triple H's shtick. I'm thankful that despite tearing a quad, you still want to go there and work, and you're in your mid-70s. You should be retired in Florida. But you're a monster workaholic, and you got the WWE Network up, and that to me is the best $10 a month you can spend, other than giving it to us. But you can, the WWE Network, I'm thankful to Vince and everyone that works to help bring the WWE Network there, because whether we question the booking, we love the booking, we hate the booking, we still watch WWE every week, and we still are in love with its product because of Vince McMahon. So for those reasons, I am thankful.
Thank you, guys.
And for that, I think this is the most appropriate music to close the show with. This is Brains to Wrestling, and it's... Yes, exactly, it is. He is Michael R. Falcone on Twitter.
Yeah.
I am at Hams Gruber on Twitter. You can follow the show at BSR Wrestling on Twitter. And you can follow the Brain Stew Radio Network, Brain Stew Radio, on Twitter. We will see you next week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Try not to be drunken buffoons. And we will see you next Wednesday.